Good afternoon. My name is Jenny McKibben, and I am with the Alert Immunization Information System out of Oregon. And I am here to give you our perspective on how the scanning implementation happened in Oregon. So I'll give you a little bit of background. In 2008, we received a CDC grant to explore innovative data capture, new methods for aggregate reporting of flu vaccine doses in the 2008-2009 season. And with that grant, we used that money to purchase and test implementation of a two-sided patient-level scannable form, and also purchase DataCap software to process and verify these forms. Now, our initial pilot tests looked really promising in 2008 and 2009, and we had received a lot of good feedback from our partners that we worked with there, and also my colleague Kathy Scott presented it at last year's conference. So I want to give you a high-level timeline. So obviously we all know that when H1N1 started, but we actually started a little bit prior to that in, like I said, late 2008 with this new grant. And then we presented, like I said as well, in March on those early promising findings. Then in April, that is of course when all the news broke out about H1N1, and so immediately after that, we decided that we were going to fast track all of our plans that we initially had on using this new technology. Preliminary, we had plans were to totally go through what we had learned in our pilot and reformat that form and get it so it's a really good method for our providers to use. But with H1N1, we decided that, okay, so plans are changing, we're fast tracking this, and we are going to get this form out and ready. We wanted it to be ready to go by the time H1N1 vaccine we received it in the state of Oregon. And that was our first success. We actually did get it done in time, and so we were pleased with that. And so what that entailed was working with this new DataCap software that we had purchased and having one person on our team be that primary person to understand that software and teach the rest of us. And so we worked on developing the form, thought we had a pretty good product, and had it available for providers once H1N1 vaccine came out. So that was our first success. Then in October, we did receive the vaccine, and when we started shipping out the vaccine, we had explicit instructions on how you can actually enter these data into our system, and one of those options was a scannable form. And then, and currently, now in April, here we are, and we have obviously received a lot of data in our system, but we are still receiving it through scannable forms and other methods. So on top of all of this, just one little complicating factor to this, we all have our regular day jobs, and then we added H1N1. So for us with Alert, that meant a little addition to our timeline. We are currently in the middle of implementing a new system, a new statewide system in Oregon, which of course has there's a lot of challenges with that, but it's been great. And so on top of H1N1, I'll go back to April of 2009, we were on a little mini high in Oregon because we had just completed a very important phase with our new system. It was the proof of concept phase, and we were pretty excited about moving on to the next phase of our system. And then, of course, right after that, H1N1 hit, and so a lot of priorities were shifted. In October, we then completed the next phase of our new system, and that was the functional design document phase, which if anybody knows anything about functional design documents, they will know that it was very difficult and hard, but very rewarding once we were finished. And now, currently, we are still working on the new system, and we are still working on H1N1, but our big goal is in July of 2010, very soon, we'll be implementing our new system. So that was very exciting. So early decisions for H1N1. In Oregon, what we decided is basically, as soon as we heard about H1N1, we were in our planning phase. We wanted to jump on this and make sure that we were communicating as fast as we could with all of our partners, and we knew what we were communicating. So a little bit of working with our internal program, the rest of the immunization program, we decided that distribution was going to go through our counties, tribes, and state agencies, and then those groups would allocate the vaccine onto the other providers. With that, we knew that any way people would need to submit doses, we would have to know at that time so these folks could distribute that information as well. So the other decision made was that it was required for anybody who was going to be administering H1N1 that they did send that data into ALERT. So another piece to add to all of this is that prior to 2008, ALERT was a childhood registry. And in 2008, we passed legislation to become Lifespan. And of course, with that meant we got the opportunity to go Lifespan, but there was no funds attached. And so we had decided that was going to be a slow progression, finally going fully into Lifespan when we rolled out into our new system. So that was obviously fast-tracked. But one benefit to H1N1 and receiving all this influx of data is that our adult population in our system has increased exponentially. It is amazing how much adult data we now have. So I just want to quickly talk about a few of the ways that we offered folks so they could submit data to us. So basically, we have many providers who already submit data to us, and so we promoted the fact that they could just use their regular submission to send in their H1N1 information. Then we also had available to them the scannable vaccine administration form, which I will talk a lot more about in a minute. And our intent was that clinics would use that form more in mass vaccination clinics. And then we also had our web entry form, and in ALERT, we've never had a user interface of sorts for folks to enter directly into our system. And so this was an entry method that we have used for a few years for flu vaccine only. It's just one of those aids that we helped a lot of especially our local health departments who just didn't have enough time to enter it in their regular means. Want to talk a little bit about some complicating factors. So as we've already heard multiple times today, and we'll probably hear for the rest of the week, our numbers of enrolled clinics totally increased. So we went from our sources jumped from about 650 to 1,900 in that time. So only about 30% of our providers for H1N1 were existing providers. So you can imagine the workload increases with that. Some of our new providers are pretty standard across the nation, occupational health, EMTs, pharmacies, as well as a variety of other clinics. Also, we had one other thing that popped up that we didn't quite realize would happen was our regular providers, may it be a pediatric office or a family practice office, who normally saw children were seeing other people that were not their regular patients. So if one of their things that they offered to their patients was offering this vaccine to people who weren't normally their patients. So that meant that they did not want to enroll those extra people, parents or whomever, into their current patient log and send us that data via their regular means. So after all of that, we realized that our two new submission methods were going to be used much more than we had anticipated. So we have our online web entry and the vaccine administration record. So here's just a peek at our online web entry. Very simple form. A clinic, all they would have to do is call us and say that we want to have access to this form, and we would give them access and they could use it. Basically, we just talk about their, and I'll list their organization in the middle of the screen. We have a clinic date, as well as all the demographic data in the middle. And then at the bottom would be the vaccine information. And there's drop downs for seasonal flu or H1N1. We did offer it for both seasonal flu and H1N1. And then at the bottom that I don't have up here on the screen, it would actually list every single patient that you had put in, you had data entered in there, so they could have an ongoing list of where they were at in their stack of trying to get things entered. So that was our very simple web entry screen. And this is just a piece of our vaccine administration record. So we took a little bit different route with this. is that we actually combined the submission form with a vaccine administration record. So our providers only had to fill out one piece of paper per client to get all the necessary information that they needed for their own best practice, as well as all the information that we needed to submit that info into the registry. And so this worked out really well for our partners. It was a form that, of course, there was some negative feedback, but in reality, it really helped out providers because they were able to get everything done on one piece of paper. They would fill out the form, photocopy it, keep the photocopies for their records, and then send us the original. We did not have a system like Keith mentioned about faxing it in or scanning it in elsewhere. What we actually did is they had to send us the originals and we scanned it in ourselves. One more piece about this. The front page was a two-sided document, and the front page had all of the demographic data on top, and then on the bottom was all of the pertinent information that people had to, the clinical questions they had to ask to see if they were able to receive a vaccine that day. And then on the back side, it was for clinical purposes only, and it was all of the vaccination information. And once again, they could submit either their H1N1 or their seasonal flu on this, but no other vaccines. This is just a quick slide showing you all of the variety of things that we had purchased for this. So we had two separate PCs that one was our main scanner PC, and then we had another as our backup. And we had also purchased a scanner that was fit to scan hundreds and hundreds of forms at the time. And then also we purchased our DataCap Taskmaster software. And then another piece of software that ran with it that was a virtual rescan software. So there's a lot of pieces that were necessary to purchase before we even get started. So a little bit about what we have actually in our system now. So to date, about 870,000 doses were submitted from about 1,400 sources. And with that, 250,000 H1N1 doses were submitted through that scannable form. So a good chunk of the data that was submitted to us was through this format. We still have data coming in, and we have new partners that are still signing up to administer this vaccine. So this was our intended workflow. Basically, like I said, it was a pretty simple form for clinics to use on their end, and they just filled it out, sent it to us in the mail, and we would scan it, and then we had five dedicated staff, some permanent, some temporary, to go through the verification process. So what that meant was a lot of work, and it looks very simple because it's a nice little arrow from the clinic to the mailbox, and then from the mailbox to the scanner. But what it meant was we had a staff member who had to deal with the influx of all of the mail that was coming in. Our mail room, I think, started to curse us after a while because it got pretty crazy. And so one of our biggest issues was actually finding places to store all forms. And in our dream world, we hoped that this workflow was going to work throughout the entire season, but I will tell you it did not. So majority of our data was submitted through electronic transfer. That's pretty standard for us in Oregon. 13% was submitted through IRIS, which is our medical record system for immunizations in our local health departments. So we actually had two systems, Alert and IRIS, that we would have to communicate with each other to have a complete data set and alert. But we also obviously received 13% of the H1N1 data from IRIS. And then 4% of our data came through barcode and hard copy, which for us, that is a barcode system that has been very successful for us in Oregon for years, especially for clinics who do not have any electronic health record or anything similar, maybe not even internet access in Oregon. So we still have some percentage coming in that way. And then we have 36% that we combined here, because 36% was submitted through scanning and web entry. And yes, that is a combined category, and I will show you why. So here's just a breakdown, a little pretty little pie chart for you to see the breakdown that I just mentioned. And so we assumed that 80% of our providers would use their existing methods. In reality, only 30% of those providers were existing, and then even those had to use another method. So we saw that there was these providers were high volume, so we received multiple ways of entry from them, and we just realized that our first assumption was not even close. Our second assumption was that scannables forms would be verified in 30 seconds or less. The reality was that verification times were about a minute and 15 seconds per form after the data entry person was used to the system and understood the way it should work. And they were really working as hard and as fast as they could, and it was still about a minute 15. And with that, the other reality was there were still many data quality issues. And we had to tweak our software system a lot to try to get to a standard that we felt comfortable with. And then I say this tongue in cheek, but we realized that Oregonians have really bad handwriting. either that or handwriting is still a very hard thing to decipher via scanning forms. So with all of that, we had to shift. I'm sure many folks had to shift all of their great plans throughout the H1N1 show, I should say. So in December, we noticed that we had a huge backlog. I mentioned before that we had problems storing the actual forms, and it was pretty obvious. And so about 30 to 40% of the data coming through was on scannable forms. And we realized at that point that we were not going to get the amount of forms, we were not going to get enough data entered in a timely fashion to use this method. So at that point, we decided to start talking to our partners who were using the scannable form and ask them to start using web entry. Some actually did. So I want to talk quickly about the breakdown again. So what we thought, or what it should have been if we were able to stay with just using our scanning method, that 29% of our data would come through scanning and only 7 would come through web entry. And what it really broke down to is that we had to completely shift again and take all those hard copied scan forms and hire folks to come in and do data entry off of those forms. And so 31% of that turned into web entry, and only 5% was actually gone through our scanning technology. And that, of course, was because of timeliness. We really needed to get that data in. Our state partners were needing that data. Our local health departments were needing that data, as well as nationally. So, lessons learned. Pros. We had high user acceptance from our partners. They thought the form was easy to use. Obviously, it helped them. They were extremely busy and taxed and didn't have time for data entry, and that, of course, pushed that data entry over onto our state staff. And new users who have never, most of the new users didn't even really have much experience with administering vaccine, let alone submitting it to our registry. And so this form was very simple for them to use. They knew that they had to fill out as much as they could and send it in. And definitely tested the boundaries of a new data capture method. And we found that we were still able to capture a really good aggregate number, that we were able to report most of our findings to the CDC through that aggregate number. So that was very successful. And so we do have a few cons, as you can imagine. So we have, in Oregon, an AL number, which is our alert number, and then we also have the vaccine for children, PIN, which I'm sure everybody's familiar with. And so we had issues with partners knowing which one they were actually supposed to use on the form. And so even though we'd printed AL on there, we often got the VFC PIN, which of course meant that we had to do a lot of sorting before we could even go through the process of scanning. Quality issues were substantial with new submitters. The form was easy for them to submit, but the actual understanding of why we needed all of that information was not clear. Obviously, the verification of handwritten demographic information was time-consuming, and I said before, our process became very backlogged. And We, at the time, were really taxed already. We were basically maintaining two current systems and working on a new. So if we would have had more time, we probably would have done even a better job with our scanning. So we hired 18 additional staff. We have a really good partnership with our preparedness folks in Oregon, and we partnered with them to hire 18 additional staff that we had sequestered in this little bitty training room with 18 computers, and they were excellent. They did a lot of data entry for us, and we eliminated that backlog in 8 weeks. And if we had not done this, we would probably still be doing our verification process. Obviously, with hiring data entry folks who were very good but didn't have much knowledge about immunization information, we still have a lot of data cleaning and deduplication that we are continuing to do. So, early lessons learned. Basically, our centralized processing was not a feasible option for us in Oregon, and possibly if we were to do this again, we would need to look at some of the other options, like having scanners out in local health departments to do it that way. And the other piece is that, as I mentioned a few times, we were working on our new system, and with our new system, we knew that we could look up patients and enter data at that point. But what we're working with now is we are re-entering demographic data that we already had in our system. And the one thing that I said earlier as well is that we did get a lot of adult data and a lot of adult demographics. That is a huge plus for us, and that is our biggest success, I think, with H1N1. The other thing is that as a state, we need a better broad agreement about what the minimum data capture could be. Of course, we all tried to make decisions early and keep with those decisions, but they did change along the way, and that tended to be a little bit difficult for us. And so I mentioned already that users need full access to the data they submit to IIS, and with a 30 to 40% backlog of all of the data, this was not a way that we wanted to be supporting our clinicians as they were working so hard. So, see, I guess that's really all I have. I just want to acknowledge co-author Mary Beth Carrillo, our alert director, Rick Hammontree, our IIS project manager, who allowed us to work on H1N1 when we really should have been, in his mind, working on our new system. And obviously our alert IIS team, who worked really hard through all of this. And, of course, all of our H1N1 partners and stakeholders. Thanks.
We have 15 minutes for questions, and there's a microphone in the back there.
Yes, I'm Mary Conant from Massachusetts, and in listening to the presentations, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm kind of getting the feeling that you're not going to stick with the scanning process. Is it correct to assume that?
For us in North Dakota, I know to do it for just regular vaccines that are routinely administered, it would not be feasible due to the validation issues. That time is just too much for us. We don't have the resources to do that. If another H1N1 type event would arise, I can't say right now. It would completely depend on the event, depend on the resources about what we would decide to do. But for routine vaccines, it wouldn't be feasible.
Okay. And for us, that's kind of the same. So we never know what we might do if we have another pandemic that comes through. But the reality is we have a new system, and so a lot of the reasons we needed that scanning form, we might be able to use with our new system. But then also, it was a really good aggregate capture for us. And so if that's all we need for something and not a patient level capture, then yes, we would use that again.
Okay. And Teresa, do you feel the same way about the scanning?
No, I think Michigan would use it again. Okay. And we had 1.5 million doses collected in the registry administered, and 350,000 came from scan. And if we take our lessons learned and implement it with those, I think we'll be okay.
Okay, all right. Thank you, I appreciate it.
Any other questions? Go ahead, B. The question is, in North Dakota, they dropped one number off the provider ID. And did you accept that data or fix it and then bring it back in?
For the numbers that were dropped, we ended up fixing it and bringing it back in. We also had people, though, who left their provider ID entirely off the form. And we had no way to reach back and to see who that was, because this form just showed up blank. And so what we would do there is we'd put it in as unknown and to contact the health department if you had any questions about that record. We wouldn't be able to tell them the specifics of that, like who the actual provider was, but yes, it would belong to us and through an unknown provider.
We actually had a little bit of that problem as well, and one of the ways that we did it is we ended up putting more people at the beginning of our sorting methods, because we received all of the data in hard copy. And so what we would do is have one person sort all the mail, and if they noticed that they didn't have that number on there or if it was incorrect, we would look at the return address on the envelope or a variety of different ways and try to figure out who that clinic was.
Any other questions? Yes.
Were you guys able to, first of all, do you have the ability to draw information from those scannable forms other than the agent heard of them or whatever? And so, what sort of data did you collect from the race, people who had, who were in the priority groups that you gave the vaccine to? Was that a possibility for you to use those scannable forms?
That's a great question. Everybody hear that? What other data elements did you collect? Did you do priority groups, race, and ethnicity? Keith? Oh, sorry.
In North Dakota, we did collect things like race, ethnicity, gender, everything like that. We collected the priority groups. And so we did have all of those data elements that we do want to see in the registry that were collected. We didn't require them for scanning. We didn't reject. Well, initially we did. We fixed that, and so we didn't later on reject anything that was left blank. We just put those as unknown for race or ethnicity or gender or anything like that.
We also did that. We did not actually do priority groups in a certain way. We did add a few questions to the VAR, the question piece of it, and so with that we were able to derive some information about how some of the groups that they would fit in, but we didn't actually do a priority group listing. We did also have gender as part of our demographic data, but we did not do race or ethnicity.
And Michigan collected priority group funding source, and we also collected antiviral information, so it was more than just H1N1. Influenza, and then the form also, you could use it for seasonal influenza in case you had both seasonal influenza and H1N1 going on at a Mass clinic. And I think one thing we're really anxious to see is the addresses that we collected, because when providers use the registry and they hand key in, they're not as good about entering new addresses. And with 350,000 forms coming in, we're hoping to have captured some new addresses on families. So. Yes, another question?
Hi, I'm Claire Newburn from Philadelphia. I just wanted to ask, for in Oregon, was any unforeseen issues with the two-sided scanning? Because we only do one-sided, so I'd be surprised.
Yes, so we probably thought there was going to be a lot more issues than there was, because one of the ways that we combated it is we were really worried about people photocopying the form and sending it into us two separate pieces of paper and then getting lost and just the nightmare with that. But in reality, because of our specifications for the scanning software, we would not let anybody else print the form. And so we actually did a centralized printing and sent them all out and did not accept we actually did accept copied forms, but we knew that they would have to go to manual entry rather than that. So we perceived a lot of issues, and we really didn't receive any with the scanning piece. We did have a few complaints that it was two-sided, but not that many.
And in North Dakota, I didn't touch on this in my presentation, but the backside of the scanning form did have all the screening questions for both H1N1 type of vaccine, so it did have both the live attenuated questions and the injectable inactivated. And so that side was not scanned in. It was just for that provider to have to be able to screen people as they're coming in for which vaccines they should receive and whether they're contraindicated for any vaccine.
I think that's the most difficult piece with scan forms is that when you create a scan form, you have four corners, and that's what the scanner reads, and you need these numbers on those corners so that the scanning software can read the form. And in Michigan, we had a PDF online, and then everyone could print that off and fill in their clinic ID and then make copies. But some copies were shrinking the forms, some were crooked, so when they came through, the software couldn't read it. So those would have to be hand keyed in, and sometimes we just sent it back to the site that submitted that. Others, if it were not that many, we would go ahead and enter that, hand key it in. But it was really a lesson in the beginning, and then to ask those facilities to be sure how to copy it just right. I think if we could have printed it and handed it out, it would have been the best, if we could have given them the forms. But that is the real trick of scanning, using paper.
Yeah, but that was a big cost for us as well, was the printing and shipping of those forms.
We did that as well because our scanning vendor was very concerned about people doing their own copies and it not being read in. So we sent them all out to people, and that was definitely a significant cost.
The other thing in Michigan is we hired staff that could verify to help out during this time, but also the health departments all had access to verify if they chose, and our regional MICR staff did too. So we had a lot. We actually had up to the capability of almost 60 people who could actually verify these forms if needed, and that was really helpful when we were so clogged and we had so many at one time to ask people to help. And some counties, really, local health departments took on all that responsibility and did an excellent job with that. Any other questions? I just wanted to ask, I noticed on Oregon's form, you don't have boxes that people fill in, and your scanner reads that.
Well, there weren't actually boxes, but they were a little nodules, little slips, and the reason for that is because we were told that our vertical and horizontal lines would be dropped, and so if people put in an eye or something and it went directly on that vertical line, that it would be dropped and we wouldn't know what that information really was. And so basically in our design, working with our vendor, we did the little nodule. So
it's clever.
That's just, we had a different software.
And did you guys use both the same product? Which product do you use for scanning the software?
We use DataCap.
DataCap?
We use GoScan.
And we use Teleform. So we have three different products. So, any other questions? We really appreciate everyone being here today. And please fill out evaluations. And we look forward to seeing you at other sessions. Thank you.